Welcome to the Fresh Start Podcast, brought to you by attorneys Gina Cho and Jeff Curl of JC Law Group, whose practice is dedicated to bankruptcy for individuals and small businesses. Thanks for joining us. I'm Matt Hayes. Please note this podcast is not legal advice. For more information, visit jclawgroup.com. Now let's welcome Gina and Jeff to our eighth podcast. How are you two doing today?
Good. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Thanks for joining us today. A very interesting topic we're going to be discussing here on our podcast, student loans, which we hear a lot about, especially with it being an election year. It's kind of a hot topic. Some of the politicians are discussing it. But also, Gina, really interesting news coming out about student loan debt. We've hit over $1 trillion in debt as a nation when it comes to student loans.
Yeah. So there's a lot of speculation about the student loans sort of being the next mortgage crisis. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the student loan. Because, I mean, there is a huge problem with students that are graduating from college or, you know, law school or other schools with huge amounts of student loans with really no prospects of being able to repay it.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends of mine that I just spoke with one yesterday, actually, and she is apartment hunting. And I said, well, how much are you looking to spend? See if I can know some neighborhoods or something that could help her out. And she said, she told me how much. And she said, no joking, her words right after that were, if I didn't have student loans, it'd be a lot higher than that. You know, it seems to be, you hear a lot about that from people when they're talking about things.
Yeah, and you know, and I think it's unfortunate because there's so little education for the students about student loans, you know, and if you're 18, a freshman in college, you know, there's just a lot of information that you just don't know. And you know, if you're giving an 18-year-old $120,000 of loans, you know, it almost seems irresponsible.
I think it feels like for kids too, that if you get $100,000 and you go, well, you know, I'm going to go out and earn, even if you just say $50,000 a year, it sounds like you should be able to pay it back really fast.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll take care of that in 5 years. It just doesn't work that way with all your other life's expenses and, you know, what a dream. I mean, that'd be great if it worked that way. It just doesn't.
It is, and everyone just jumps into it, not really knowing what they're going to go to school for anyway, and just start racking up debt.
Right. And it's just, it feels like free money. And you know, you're probably spending a lot of it just, you know, drinking it away.
Yeah.
While you're in school.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think that the student loan debt is up to something like $1 trillion, and I think it's exceeded credit card debt now as our number one debt beyond other than mortgages, and it's only climbing, and I keep seeing clients with 100, 200, 300, 400,000 in debt, and with the job market the way it is, they don't have a lot of prospects. I think a lot of it, you know, stems from schools too. They make representations about what you're going to earn when you get out of school. And we're finding that this isn't always the case.
What's the general rule when it comes to student loans? Whether, you know, are they good or bad? Is there a kind of a good, from your aspect, from what you guys see and seeing, Jeff, like you said, you see people coming in with 400K worth of debt. Is this a good or bad thing? Are there some general rules that they should keep in mind as they go through, you know, debating what to do here?
I don't have a rule. I mean, I really don't have a rule about what's good or not. I think you have to do your due diligence because there's been several lawsuits and class actions stemming up about, you know, you look at, try to look at something objective like U.S. News World Report about school rankings and how much is tuition, what's their job placement and success and things like that. And you're finding that schools are inflating things. And I know in law school, one of the big ones is job placement. And one of the statistics that they measure, the way they measure that is schools send out surveys to the students after they graduate and they ask, do you have a job? And it's my understanding that what a lot of schools did is lots of students don't reply. And either they don't reply just because they don't have time, they don't care, or they don't have a job. And if you don't reply, what the schools would do is they would just assume that you had a job and report you as being placed. And that is completely inaccurate. I mean, if 30% of your students aren't getting jobs and you're reporting them as actually getting jobs, it looks fake.
Gina, there was a law school that was actually sued recently, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was actually several lawsuits. There's a class action lawsuits going on right now where, you know, exactly what Jeff was talking about, where the schools misrepresented to the students their prospects of getting a job after law school, after graduating from law school, and how much they can expect to earn. And I think this is very common, right, where, you know, you think as when you're going into school, you think, oh, you know, I'll be able to find a job making six figures, no problem. I know for me, it was sort of a shocker when I graduated from law school and I started looking for a job that those six-figure jobs are actually kind of hard to come by. And yeah. most jobs were paying a lot less than what I was expecting. And, you know, if you're doing your math based on, you know, misrepresentation from the school, you know, and that there just isn't a whole lot of information out there about salaries.
Yeah, and it's gonna, and every single person is gonna have a very different path when it's all said and done anyway, but everyone just sees the dollar amounts and kind of are inspired by that number and think, hey, I can do that. That shouldn't be a problem. Sure, I'll just rack on the debt, not even thinking about it in any way, shape, or form. One thing that a lot of people do, you see a lot of parents co-signing and trying to help their kids out. They want to make sure that they have a great education that can help them get going for the future and all that. And I'm sure their heart's in the right place and it's for good intentions. Is that a good thing or a bad thing for parents to do?
I'm totally against it, you know, because student loans are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. So not only does it put the parents in a bind, but, you know, so now both the parents and the child is responsible for that student loan and they can't get out of it. And we're seeing a lot of, you know, parents that are getting to retirement age, but they can't because they're paying for their child's, you know, college student loans. And now the kid's back at home as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm personally against it.
And even the bankruptcy student loan issue aside, I mean, student loans have an immunity card. I think federal student loans are never, there's no statute of limitations. It's not like you can wait it out and hide like you can with a contract or a credit card or other things. You can wait so many years and they can't come after you. Student loans have so many immunity cards, at least federal. I mean, they can even tap Social Security. So they're dangerous. And you have to be really careful. I've seen some co-signing contracts for student loans that I don't mind between parents and the kid, that if there are, it's usually like 12 or 20 consecutive payments, and then the parent is released. And when you have an exit like that, as long as the parent or someone has enough money to make the minimum payment, at least for those payments, to guarantee that they can get themselves out, at least you have that. That doesn't bother me as much, but parents, they take out these parent plus loans, and yeah, it gets real dangerous real fast.
Going back to what we were talking about in terms of, you know, how much student loans is too much, you know, I think kids need to sit down and have a, you know, do the math and figure out, okay, if I'm earning $60,000 a year after taxes, after rent, you know, after all of my expenses, how much am I going to have left over to service my student loan? And the answer is probably not that much, you know, and nowadays, you know, it's just so, the job market is just, you know, really hard.
The one thing that I see a lot of, and I wonder if this is a problem and maybe this is something that just needs to be addressed. I have a lot of friends of mine that have their bachelor's degree and maybe they're in a job or are looking for work and they're not finding anything. And they say, you know what, I think I'm going to go back and get, you know, a master's degree or maybe go to law school for a bit or get some sort of higher education on top of my bachelor's and just add another $30,000 or $40,000 to debt. And I ask, why are you doing that? Are you planning on using that for a certain job? No, I think it's just, you know, a smart thing to do right now. Really? And you're unemployed and you're adding another $30,000, $40,000 of debt. Are there lots of stories like this or am I the only one seeing this?
No, there's lots of stories like that. In law school, it is strange because when you get there, a lot of people have conversations about why are you in law school or why am I here? And I was surprised at how many people just said, well, I just wanted to get a doctorate of some kind or I just felt like I should go to law school. Yeah. And they didn't really want to be a lawyer. They didn't really care. It was kind of strange. And it's a very expensive prospect. You know, if I could get out of law school with $30,000 in debt, I would have been very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably looking at closer to, you know, $150,000. And a lot of that is going to be private loans, which has much higher interest rate. And, you know, I mean, I feel like the thing about student loans is that it really kind of puts you behind when you start working, you know, because you're not going to be able to go out and buy a home right away or, you know, if you want to get married or have kids or whatever, you know, it really just kind of puts you, you know, further behind financially. You know, I can't even imagine someone with $200,000 of student loan debt trying to add another $500,000 of mortgage on top of that.
So what do you do if you're in a situation where you have too much student loans that you're trying to deal with on your budget and going through, you know, just life and it's starting to get really tough? Are there things that people can do to help solve the situation?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. I mean, most lenders have programs themselves for deferment or forbearance. And it depends who you have. I mean, if you do a private loan that's serviced by ACS, AES, or those other big guys, they're going to have their own terms, and federal back loans seem it varies. You have to sit down, and that document again has lots of small print. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to read that, or at least parts of it, because that's going to contain terms about what you can do. Because some of these people, you can only defer for, if you refinance in a private loan, for example, a lot of them will only let you defer for 12 months total over the life of the loan. If you have a 30-year loan, that doesn't give you a lot of chances if things go badly. But certainly deferment and forbearance, where you apply because you don't have a job, you're in school, there's lots of ways to delay repaying, but you also have to measure, like, for example, do you have federal loans that are subsidized and unsubsidized? That means the government pays interest if it's subsidized, which is good. If you defer those, then it doesn't, the principal doesn't build, but it does on the unsubsidized. So you're going to have to, there's a lot of math and decisions and a lot of reading to do on how to choose what to do.
Yeah, and this is definitely one of those areas where you want to be proactive. I meet with students or graduates that just, don't want to deal with it. So, they wait until their wages being garnished or they've been sued, and you don't want to do that. You definitely want to be proactive. If you're going to be late or if you can't afford to pay it, definitely reach out to the lender and see what you can work out.
Another possibility is to enroll in school. And some people do this as a tactic where they just go to a local community college because credits are so cheap per unit, and they just enroll in 6 units of a half-time student, and that will get you a deferment on your loan. And that's just one tactic people use.
Now, if someone is in a situation where they're thinking, is bankruptcy an option for me? Maybe they've been discussing it with you guys, or they're thinking about it, and one of their problems is their student loans. Are there options for them? Is bankruptcy an option and a path they can go down?
It sort of depends. If there's other debts like credit cards or medical debts where it makes sense to file for bankruptcy and at least get rid of the debts that can be discharged through bankruptcy, it may put the person in a better position where you can start paying the debts. If that's not an option, there is Chapter 13. But Chapter 13 is a little bit tricky because basically what it allows you to do is sort of put the student loans into a deferment for 5 years. So we figure out how much you can afford to pay, and that's the amount that you would pay for 5 years. But during those 5 years, the interest will continue to accrue. So it's possible that at the end of the 5 years, you'll end up with a higher student loan balance than when you started. The interesting thing about Chapter 13 is that you can do what's called like perpetual Chapter 13, where you do one, get out of Chapter 13, and then do another Chapter 13. And it's sort of a last resort, and it's a way to keep the student loans at bay, particularly if they're being, very aggressive.
It's for someone who, if you've got $500,000 in student loan debt and you just don't have any real hope, you have enough money to kind of survive, but you're never going to pay that back. What you get into Chapter 13 by doing it in perpetuity is every time you file, you get an automatic stay, which means they can't collect from you. You still owe them because student loans and bankruptcy are not dischargeable.
Right.
You can't get rid of them unless you meet the exception, which is called undue hardship. The undue hardship is a really, really high standard, and it's hard to meet. Just to break it down, there's really 3 little pieces to it. The first one is that the person who files can't maintain, based on their current income and expenses, a minimal standard of living. This gets into real fact-sensitive stuff. It's person by person. I'll tell you, the student loans fight every case pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And they pretty much always go to trial. And that minimal standard of living, it's also going to depend on your judge. I mean, I've seen cases turned down where because the person had cable and some other stuff that the judge said you could have cut out.
Yeah.
So you don't meet that minimal standard of living. So it has to be pretty darn minimal. I mean, it's not there for you to maintain your status quo of your car payments on your BMW, that you want to live in the best part of town. They're not going to sustain that. So you've got this minimal standard of living. And then, Gina, what's the second part of the undue hardship test?
And the second one is that, whatever hardship that you're experiencing is going to last sort of in perpetuity. So, whether it's some sort of a disability some sort of a medical condition or where you really can't work and you really have no expectation that you're going to start earning a living in the future.
And that's really hard. It's not, because it probably feels like that for a lot of people right now that haven't been able to get a job for 2 years or 3 years. But if you've got an education and you've got a bachelor's degree in engineering, or you went and got your MBA and you're 35, 40 years old, there's an expectation that at some point you're going to be able to work and earn some type of living and be mm-hmm. able to pay some back. And maybe you won't even be able to pay it all back. But unless you can show, like Gina said, something like, you had an accident, you're paralyzed, or you've got, and it can be mental or physical disabilities that can get you out. But that can be a hard one to meet. Gina, what's the third piece?
The debtor has made a good faith effort to repay the loan. So that sort of requires that you've gone through all the channels available to you through the student loan company, such as exhausting all the deferment and the forbearance options. And some, particularly with federal loans, if you can't pay it for long periods of time, they will actually forgive the loans. I think it's like 25 years or something like that. So it does require you to exhaust all of those remedies before, you try to discharge the debts in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
But overall, though, these pretty much are non-dischargeable. You're going to have to deal with them in some way, shape, or form. So pretty much bankruptcy is more of an option to help you deal with it more reasonably and maybe give you a little bit more time or some different financial options to be able to pay them off.
Well, yeah, that would be true in a Chapter 13. So the bankruptcy can be dealt with in two chapters. So in a Chapter 13, we're going to work out some sort of repayment plan for you that's more affordable than whatever your normal monthly payment amount is. Or in a Chapter 7, we can apply for this, undue hardship. And it has to be litigated. So this is the other issue with discharging student loans in a Chapter 7 is that, typically speaking, the person comes in, they're flat broke. It's just really, really expensive to litigate these things in bankruptcy court. And they're not, they're just not going to have the funds to be able to litigate it.
And I wanted to make a point on that third prong of the undue hardship, where you have to show you made good faith efforts to repay the loan. What's making it hard too, I think there's good intentions, but every time government introduces a new program, they say, okay, if you had this loan and, we'll do this income contingent repayment plan, or we'll do this income based that they're called IBR, ICR plans. If you don't explore those options with your lender, and a lot of people don't even know they exist, they're not particularly well publicized. If you don't explore those options, the lender can come back into court. If you try to do an undue hardship discharge, they can just come to the judge and say, look, we have this program available where you can do it based on their income, which may mean that they pay nothing for the next 5 years. And they never even applied or asked us about it, and that you're going to lose your case. So it this is where you have to really pay attention, and it's hard because the information, it keeps changing. Things keep changing. They keep adding new programs and taking them away, and it can be very overwhelming, I think, to a lot of people.
So if you're going to be going to school and you're thinking about getting student loans, you really have to do your homework and know what you're getting yourself into and ask a lot of questions and talk to some professionals. If you are stuck and having a very hard time with your student loans, there really aren't that many options, but there are a few that you possibly could be able to use, but you should talk to a professional and see, of the few that are available, maybe it could be beneficial for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard right now, but there are some options. And I think it's going to be a political solution at some point, because they just limited the amount of tools they made available to people with high student loan debt.
I agree with what Jeff said. Definitely be proactive. It is definitely difficult out there, especially with the job situation the way it is. But there are some options that are available, and if the creditors are knocking on your door and they're gonna sue you or something like that, there is Chapter 13 that's available.
Gina and Jeff, thank you for your time today on this topic. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. For more information and to listen to other episodes of our podcast, visit jclawgroup.com. JC Law Group is a debt relief agency under the United States Bankruptcy Code.